The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name, buried in cheers and applause? Of course there isn't. Today I'm taking a page from the George Lucas playbook, doing a sort of prequel show. Bonus episode 21, just posted, tackles a subject almost all of us can relate to. How do you get back home? Not from a party or a trip. I'm talking when you want to go home and you've been away, not a day or a week or even months, but for years. It's a near universal experience. I've had it several times. I bet you have too. And in that bonus episode, I gave the latter part of the story. How, as an adult, I left home and went 3,000 miles from New York to L.A. and after a few years, back to New York. But when I got there, something happened. Home was not the same. The place had changed. The people had changed. And most imperceptibly, I had changed. That's the one we never notice, do we? There have been many books and movies and songs about this experience. The title that hit it most squarely was Thomas Wolfe's You Can't Go Home Again. But to me, the most powerful artistic medium by far, and I mean no contest, is music. And a number of songs have tried to capture the feeling. I'm going to give you a sample of each and see if you reach my conclusion as to which grabs the heartstrings and pulls them taut as a compound bow. We'll start with an old Blind Faith song, Can't Find My Way Back Home. And this may piss some people off, but it was covered by a hair band from the early 90s. They were called House of Lords, produced by Gene Simmons. And yes, I like their version better than the original.
But I'm near the end and I just ain't got the time, no. Well, I'm wasted. Can't find my way home.
Haunting and plaintive, but marred by the lyrics. The singer is wasted, leaves us wondering, is he really missing home or just too fucked up to find his house keys? Next up, an old one from Neil Diamond. This one holds a lot of emotional sway over me. As a kid, I was doing a voiceover in a Manhattan studio, and in the adjacent studio was Neil himself. When I finished up, the engineer asked if I wanted to meet Neil, and of course, I did. I was only 6 or 7 years old, and Neil was this enormous star. And he was fucking cool. He crouched down to my level, asked me what I was working on, asked me if I was having fun. I told him I was. Then he shook my hand. Said it was nice to meet me and he'd see me again on the highway of life. I didn't know what that meant at the time, but I sure do now. I never met Neil again, but his song about being lost between two shores was as personal for me as any lyric could be.
LA is fine, the sun shines most of the time, and the feeling is laid back. Palm trees grow and rents are low, but you know, keep thinking about making my way back. Well, I'm New York City born and raised, but nowadays I'm lost between two shores. LA is fine, but it ain't home. New York's home, but it ain't mine no more. To no one there.
Nice, huh? It's a terrific song, and what an arrangement with those strings and horns. But maybe a smidge limited because of the state of geography. Some guy caught between Paris and Moscow might not relate so well. In a deeper backstory, the move from New York to L.A. had so rocked Neil's world that he wound up on a shrink's couch trying to make sense of it all, and thus begat that song. For number three, the Beatles. I've never been much of a Beatle fan, other than Abbey Road, for me their best effort. It's nearly impossible to hear this and not find a golf ball lodged in your throat, even though it's really just a run-up to a completely different song. I've played it on piano 100 times to see if I could find a path for it to reach a climax and a conclusion. I guess Lennon and McCartney hit the same wall.
Once there was a way to get back home. Once there was a way to get back home. Sleep, Rudy, darling, do not cry. And I will sing a lullaby. Golden slumber.
Growing up in New York, I was always in love with the West Coast. But that was an infatuation based on what I'd seen on TV and in movies. When I was about 18, I finally got a look in person, and I was smitten. California was all I had dreamed of, and more. I chronicled that first look in episode 15, Larry's Road Trip to Destiny. And once I got a taste, I wanted more. After several missed opportunities, I finally relocated to Los Angeles with a really good job. I soon bought a house, made some friends, but it wasn't perfect. Life never is. While I didn't miss the congestion and grime and danger and cold of New York City, I did miss my friends, all of whom had that no-bullshit attitude. In L.A., the bullshit was thicker than the smog. After a while, I got pretty comfy in L.A., several years just whipped by, and then the home office in New York calls and tells me they want me back there. They've got plans for me. To say I was conflicted would be an understatement. I finally knew my way around the vastness of Los Angeles, finally feeling kind of at home. And now I have to leave? I'd grown up in New York and knew all its flaws and quirks and advantages, and I was figuring out many of the same in L.A. I had a nice little crib with a view of the mountains and privacy. There was a horse down the street and hawks in the sky and owls at night. Nature was close. There would be none of that back in New York. Back to cramped apartments, back to subways, back to cold, back to gloom. But everyone said, "Hey, adventure career, go for the money." So I went back to New York, and for a couple of weeks, it was a blast. Welcome home parties and bar hopping with friends every night. But that calmed down pretty quickly, and the grind resumed. The VP who had whistled me back to New York with all the big plans for me soon got canned, and suddenly I'm working for some UFO who doesn't know me from Adam. And my promised promotion evaporates like a mirage on desert blacktop. Could I have started looking for another gig in New York? Well, sure, but I didn't want to, because all the same shit that had bugged me about growing up there was still in full force. And several close friends that I used to hang with were now unavailable. Why? They had married while I was living in L.A. They could no longer bounce around clubs with me 5 nights a week or go deep sea fishing or skiing on weekends. They had t-ball and soccer games to attend with their wives and kids. I wanted to pull a plug and find my way back to L.A., because with all its flaws, the life I had carved out there for myself was somehow more comfortable than the one that had left me behind in New York. I was living in an apartment on the Upper West Side. One of the things I loathe about New York is the lack of open spaces and views of the skies. It's like living in a trench. So on this night, I took the elevator to the rooftop. I felt like I was suffocating. I needed air. I needed to see the sky. I needed to find an answer. When I reached the roof, I lay in my back and tried to piece together my next moves. But I had this gnawing feeling that I'd been here, not in this exact place, but in this position, this predicament, long ago, and had forgotten a lesson I learned as a kid. My mind drifted to my 10th birthday. We had recently moved from a somewhat run-down neighborhood in Queens to a somewhat nicer area, and I missed my old friends. The kids in the new neighborhood were okay, but in the old one, they were more to my liking because they were delinquents and foul-mouthed, and most of all, authentic. They said whatever they thought about anyone and anything. There was no filter. Not very different than the cultural contrast of New York and L.A. People in New York have a reputation for being unfriendly. That reputation is undeserved. What they are is impolite. Big, big difference. People in Los Angeles tend to be more polite, but they are, in fact, far less friendly. If they think you can advance their career, then they're friendly. In New York, you make friends because they like you, not because of what you can do for them. So my 10th birthday rolls around and my parents gave me a football. It was a rubber football, orange, with fake rubber laces that were part of the entire molded thing. Of course, I was hoping for a leather football with cloth laces and that feel and action that only real pigskin has, but I didn't bitch. They were probably stretched to the max in the new house, and I was grateful for what I'd been given. It had been about 8 or 9 months since we moved. So on that 10th birthday, I decided to take myself and my new rubber football back to the old neighborhood in search of what I had left behind, what I perceived as home. I hopped a subway train and rode the 3 stops back to the old stomping grounds. In Elmhurst, the neighborhood we had moved away from, football and stickball and games of tag were never arranged in advance. They just somehow magically materialized. One needed only appear in the street, and pretty soon, enough kids would sense that there was fun out there, and bam, fun would ensue. I walked the 8 or 10 blocks from the subway station to my old house. Along the way, I passed all the haunts of my earlier childhood. A funeral home where I saw my first dead body, the father of a close friend. It was there and then that I grasped mortality. Right next to it was a small tunnel under a railroad overpass. That tunnel was the designated spot for after-school fistfights. And I had seen some epic ones. Kids that fought like men. Brutal stuff. That was just part of life in that place and time. I walked past the triangular-shaped public park with a flagpole in the middle. It was surrounded by an iron picket fence. I'd once seen a kid slip as he was going over it, and he impaled his jaw just behind his chin on one of those spikes. A bunch of us lifted him up and off the spike. There was an incredible flow of blood. An ambulance, but miraculously, he came away with no lasting damage, just a nasty scar and a hell of a story. I should mention that it was maybe the most perfect quintessential autumn day in the history of the planet. Every leaf was orange. There were already piles of them in the gutters. The sun was warm. shade was cool. The air was dry enough to create static just by swinging your arms, and when the breeze blew, trees rustled like they were filled with maracas. I reached my old house. It was like something out of a fairy tale, 3 stories high and only 11 feet wide. There it stood. Who lived there now? There were no clues, no tricycles or toys in front. I sat on the curb, wondering where my friends could be. After a while, I walked around the corner. Johnny Callahan's house was just up the block a piece. He had about 12 siblings. I was sure to see one of them. I stood in front, and pretty soon a brother came out. I asked if Johnny was around and was told he was at a track meet in Brooklyn. I walked a couple blocks to Lenny Ferrante's house. He had to be around. But his old man's Pontiac was not in front. A bad sign. I walked up the 3 steps to his front door and knocked. And knocked. Where was everybody? A block or two away, I could hear the unmistakable sound of kids playing, so I hot-footed it over there. Surely there would be some kids, I knew. As I rounded the second corner, I'm figuring I'll be in the middle of a touch football game, and none of these kids, many of whom had perpetual holes in their shoes, would give a shit about my fake rubber football. Unlike the kids in the new neighborhood who had mocked it. I saw a group of 8 or 10 kids, and as I drew closer, realized they were a few years younger, and I didn't know any of them. At that moment, a cloud passed in front of the sun. I felt a chill. There was a strong wind, and leaves fell like orange rain. It felt more like winter than fall. I returned to my block and again stood in front of my tiny, shingled former house. I felt lonesome. I heard a footfall and turned. To my right was Mr. McKeown. He was an old guy, a neighborhood fixture. He wore those massive cinderblock orthopedic Frankenstein shoes, and he had always been kind of a pill. He looked at me as he limped by and said,
"What are you doing here? I thought you moved."
He was still a pill. By now I was getting hungry. My mom had given me some money, and I headed towards school where there was a dingy deli. I ordered my favorite at the time, roast pork and a Kaiser roll, and a Yoo-Hoo to wash it down. I paid the guy and stepped outside, wondering, where should I have my lunch? The school was footsteps away, so I just planted my ass on the sharp granite steps and watched the traffic roll by as I ate my sandwich. I tried to figure out what had happened. Where had everyone gone? I looked to the right and flashed on an idea. Mikey Cullen, one of my closest pals, his apartment house was just a couple blocks away. I'd try ringing his bell on the way back to the subway station. I was so eager for company, I stood and finished the sandwich as I walked to his apartment. It was, same as every other apartment house, dark red brick, maybe 3 or 4 stories high and foreboding as fuck. I stepped into the lobby, found his name on the register, and pushed the button. Maybe 15 seconds later, his mom's voice came through the tinny speaker. I announced myself, and she told me Mikey was at the Bronx Zoo with some of his classmates. I was no longer one of his classmates. I thanked her and walked back outside. The sun had taken a permanent furlough. It was really getting cold. I hadn't thought to take a jacket with me on my excursion. It felt like summer just this morning. The football under my arm suddenly felt heavy and stupid, like a cast feels on your arm when you break it doing something moronic. It was no longer a fun toy, but a physical reminder that I had made an unwise choice that day. The choice of a kid who didn't know very much or how the world worked. I rounded the corner onto Grand Avenue. Before descending into the subway, I glanced around one more time in hopes of seeing somebody, anybody I knew. Across the avenue was a pizzeria we used to hang out in. I squinted at it, but only the owner stood inside in his white apron and t-shirt, smoking a cigarette with a 10-yard stare, killing time while time was killing him. The subway ride went very quickly. Now I couldn't wait to get home, home with Mom and Dad and my brother, and the new school, which was not all that bad, and the kids who weren't delinquents, but weren't awful either. I walked up the 3 steps past the postage stamp lawn and put the key in the door. For the first time since we'd moved, I felt good turning the key in that door. When I stepped inside, I smelled pot roast. Mom craned her neck as she looked at me from the kitchen. She was likely appraising my mood. She probably knew my trip to the old neighborhood would be not a journey home, not a visit to a place, but to a space still filled with the same houses and trees and schools and storefronts and sidewalks as before, but at the same time, empty. The old neighborhood had become a space in time, a time that had passed forever. Police sirens, 40 stories below on the street, snapped me from my reverie. A pigeon flew near and perched on the edge of the roof. He ruffled his feathers and strutted back and forth, eyeing me as if looking for a fight. I wondered if this Manhattan rooftop was his home, or just a stop-off on his way to Staten Island. It was getting cold, and the surface I lay on wasn't getting any softer. I stood and stretched. That spooked the pigeon, and he took off. I watched him dive like a hawk for several stories, then swoop upward and into the shadows of the night. The cars on 72nd Street looked like toys. Pedestrians were dots, fast-moving dots, as New Yorkers are always in a hurry. They never stroll. Which reminded me of how I had changed in my 4-year absence. I noticed it the moment I returned. Everyone on the sidewalk was passing me by. The walking pace in Los Angeles was slower, and I had assimilated and adopted it as my own. Decades before, as a 10-year-old boy, I learned you can go home again. But it's not going to be home anymore. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. If you like what you just heard, go to patreon.com/thatlarryshow. And help keep this show going. And while you're there, you can get access to the sequel of this episode, bonus show number 21. You can find out how I wound up in LA in the first place. You can also access many other bonus episodes, as well as signed books and custom recordings and lots more stuff. Come back and see us this weekend for Sinner Sunday, where we look into things spiritual. From the old wooden chapel with the steeple and the neon cocktail sign, it's like no place on earth you'll see. That's also available at patreon.com/thatlarryshow. Remember, my friends, as you wend your way across town or across the globe, home is where you make it. Try not to look back. And don't bother going back. Once you leave for good, it's gone.